Hey everyone, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. Just a little note before we get into the pod for this week. This one was recorded a little bit over a month ago now, and you'll hear Jenna O'Hay talking on it, and we talk about how she's pregnant and about to give birth. She has since given birth since we recorded this episode. It just hasn't dropped yet. So big congratulations to both Jenna and Sam on the birth of Harper Claire McKinnon. So fantastic news for them. I'm sure everyone will be looking forward to seeing Harper around basketball courts very soon, but just wanted to let everyone know before we start in this, and everyone's wondering what's happened, this one was recorded a while back. So thanks for listening, and we'll jump into the pod now.
You know what they say, fool me once, strike one, but fool me twice, strike three.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. We've gone away from The Simpsons this week and we've gone into the office. Michael Scott, always one of our fearless leaders around here. I am Rob Cotter, of course, joined by Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Jenna O'Hay, welcome, Jenna.
Thank you.
There's been a lot of baby talk in this last 20-odd minutes here that I have understood none of. But Jenna, congratulations. I think we've had you on since the announcement, but congratulations.
Thank you very much. A lot of nerves, but also a lot of excitement.
Yeah, cool.
So 34 weeks at the moment. Yep. So hopefully still 6 weeks to go.
Biggest craving? No stairs. Actually, I can tell what it is. It's not having to deal with stairs.
Yeah, the fatigue and exhaustion is really getting to me. But yeah, food-wise, I've been eating pretty normally. Yeah. It's weird. I've been I crave sort of like sweets and chocolate at nighttime, but then I feel real sick afterwards.
Yeah.
So I've sort of stayed away from them. Baby does not like
the level of discipline
chocolate.
That now actually makes your playing career make more sense to me. Because I have no such problems when I have, you know, sweets and chocolate at night.
I've had the stairs problem though.
Yeah, no,
stairs issue is definitely one.
That remains throughout. You are expecting a child, Nick, but that has no impact on your ability to climb a flight of stairs.
It doesn't, but it's just eerily, like it's crazy, right? Like I also crave chocolate at night. I don't feel bad after I've had it I struggle up the stairs. So it's
fulfilled, I believe is the word more than anything
absolutely.
Else.
Like
it makes sense. So obviously congratulations and looking forward to seeing how this all plays out for you, but you will be leaving us for a little bit and then returning, which will be fantastic fun. So, of course, coaches, you can follow along with the Talking Split podcast on socials, YouTube, Instagram. We haven't posted anything on X for God knows how long, so I probably wouldn't even bother following along on that one. But, of course, you can follow along with the podcast itself on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Time for our first – I'm just trying to find – yep, there it is. Okay, got the button right. We're good.
It's Rob's Rant. He's on the mic complaining about stuff he just don't like, from bad parking to soggy chips. Rob's Rants on Talking Split.
The best intro music of all time. Anyway, Rob's Rants for this week. Now, senior basketball has started back. Youth League's been back for what now, 3 weeks, Nick? Give or take?
Yeah.
Maybe even four? Yep.
Yeah.
Big V has been back for probably two, I think, off the top of my head.
It has, yep.
NBL 1 started back last week. Now, because of that, I found myself in many of basketball stadiums watching senior basketball. The people that are playing the pregame music, Can't Hold Us by Macklemore needs to be retired. We cannot keep doing this. It came out in 2011. It was a terrible song then. It is still a terrible song now. There is no way known anyone could be somewhat motivated to play a game of basketball hearing that. It is awful. It's his worst gear. By a long way. I'll get on board thrift shop, no problems. Downtown, about the mopeds, I'm all up for that. No problems at all. Can't Hold Us is so played out. It is awful. I need something from either the last 2 years or the 90s. There is no in-between. There is a 20-year gap in there where music sucked for pregame stuff. Awful. Please, if you are the person that is doing the music at any of your senior game nights, Macklemore needs to go. That's all I ask.
I'm just trying to think of a song that in that period that you mentioned that you could actually play. I don't know. You know what else gets played a lot? Like, I'm not changing the subject, but like Welcome to the Jungle. Have you?
Yeah, that does get a fair run.
That one,
but I'm
that
okay
one gets
with
a drop.
Guns N' Roses, that's all
yeah.
right. Yeah. I don't mind that.
Done to death, but yeah.
No more.
Can't hold us. Yeah. It is getting played. Yeah, you're right. It is played at like
Yeah. Like, we're at a game on Saturday night and had Run DMC. I'm like, absolutely.
Oh,
like,
now awesome. We're talking.
Like, this is, like, nobody else in the stadium knew what it was, but, you know, my era understood it for sure. But, yeah, Macklemore, every single game I've gone to, it's just not that good.
Is it just like, do they just punch in, you reckon they're just punching in playlist basketball?
Possibly.
And it's just bringing that song up every single time.
I don't know what it is, but not a fan. I don't know. Just one of those things. Where do you sit on Macklemore, Jenna?
Yeah. I'm
ambivalent.
Yeah, it's fine.
No problems?
Yeah, but I haven't been to a game in person. I've been more watching them online.
True.
So I haven't been hearing this as often as you have been.
Thankfully, the music comes up after the warm-up, thankfully. And but yeah, no good.
What songs were you hearing when you were doing the commentary and stuff?
I did some NBL games, but that was more in
NBL.
Studio, so you don't hear
everything.
Well, your eardrums are unaffected by the can't hold us, and it just the piano starts every time, and it just quake with rage.
He just brings it back to that song. No, I love how, like, we're talking about something, he just brings it straight back to that song.
It's got a pretty good beat, doesn't it?
But does it? Like, is it?
Do you have it? Do you have a clip snippet?
Absolutely not. I didn't think so. It will not be infecting my Apple Music playlist. And don't get me wrong, I listen to fairly different music. Like, I'll go from, you know, like Luke Combs to Run DMC to like Ben Folds 5. Like, I bounce around all over the place, but I just can't do it anymore.
Trying to just remember the song now. Is that it?
No.
Doesn't sound familiar.
No. Not even remotely close. That's the one.
That's the song.
So I was right. I just sang it wrong.
Just coaches around the world are going to be thinking of you every time it comes on.
And to be honest, I'll tip my cap to them if they play it deliberately. Like,
<it's, laughs> which they absolutely will.
If they're looking for a reaction, they will
the
get it.
Like, here it is.
There it is. Loaded up. Look, if I was going to have intro music like the wrestlers have or something like that, I want it to be better than that. I want something.
Oh, what would your song be then?
Oh, okay. Now you got me. Now, this is going to take 25 minutes.
So you're wrestling. This is your WWE.
Yep.
Far out now.
It's very hard to beat the glass smashing, like the Stone Cold era. Oh, like, that was
bringing
tingles every time I hear that. There was a song by the Foo Fighters, Gimme Stitches, that always thought was a really good, like, wrestling intro music, because I think you want it to be simple. You don't want it to be...
Not familiar with this song. I'll listen to it after.
It's a deep cut.
Okay.
Like, don't get me wrong. But it just kind of worked.
Mm.
What would you want, Nick?
Hypnotize.
Biggie. Biggie,
100%.
Well, see, I'm okay with that as the intro music.
Yeah, that would
no
be
problems.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm more than happy for that.
Yeah. Or a wrestling song would be like Run DMC, King of Kings.
Yep. Absolutely.
The DMX song.
Yeah. It's Tricky was pretty good the other night, I must admit. I haven't heard it for a while.
Cool.
Like, the last time I heard that, I think I was watching Road Trip. You know, when they do like the Irish dancing to that cracking movie. Again, if you're under 18, please watch with your parents. But yeah, that's the last time I heard it, but it was pretty good. Anyway, off on the tangent.
Do you want Jenna's or?
Oh,
do you have one?
What do you got?
I'd probably go All the Lights, Kanye.
It's not bad.
Oh, good one.
That's a
just
good one.
That intro just as I'm walking down would be
epic. There's a few Kanye ones. Like, Power was always pretty good.
Mm.
That was a good one too. I always like Black Skinhead too. It always had this the real thumping sort of beat. Anyway, we have gone off on a weird tangent.
But you've given people options, right?
No,
you've given stadiums options.
Look, never say we aren't for the people. So what we are jumping into today, this is a bit of a different one. It's been sitting in the notes on my phone for ages now, as in we should do a topic on this in particular. And the amount of times you hear just a quote that really hits for whatever reason, and sometimes it applies to what you're doing at the moment, sometimes it applies to something in the future. And I always make a note in my phone of just some things I've heard over the course. It's like, hey, I really like that. I'm going to, you know, put this in here. So all I've asked Jenna and Nick to come with is just some of their favorite quotes or sayings. Now, sometimes they'll apply to basketball. Sometimes they'll just apply to life or leadership or whatever it is. It'll go all over the place on all of this. Nick's got a Seinfeld quote in there, so I'm not entirely sure how that will apply to what we're talking about, but, you know, we'll see.
I'll make it work, Rob.
As we walked in, you weren't thinking we'd do 4 minutes on Macklemore. So, you know, it's here we are, essentially. Jenna, what's your first one that you've got for us today?
For coaching, KISS, keep it simple, stupid.
Yep.
I just think really important, and when I'm coaching, I always bring it back to that. I think sometimes we as coaches can start overthinking things, and just for the players and for myself, I think it's really important.
And it's amazing how if you get it, Like, it's, you know, we get caught up in the complexity of what basketball can look like at times, and, you know, I think we're all guilty of it. And literally just delivered a session for Ballarat coaches last night for domestic coaches coaching under 12s. And that was the biggest thing, is you don't need to be complicated.
Yeah.
Like, the basics are still the basics. Teach them how to pass, catch, dribble, shoot, move. If you've got that down, we're good after that. Refine it, sure, but simple is better.
Sometimes we, because we're inherently like fixers, we're just trying to fix everything, and all of a sudden we've built up all these layers and we start to just strip them away again. That's usually the biggest issue. I'll put this offense in to get the shooter open. I'll go put this offense in to get the post player open. When you can just fix your initial stuff at the start to get them options, it's a good one to come back to.
And defensively, I feel like we can get really complicated doing all these different schemes, which just confuses our players. Just keeping it simple. And
what's the most simple defensive coaching advice you've ever given someone?
Just that?
Yeah. Be simple, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the most simple one I ever give anyone is just stay in front of the ball. I don't care how you do it. I don't care if you slide. I don't care if you run backwards. Just stay in front of the ball. Like, that's the if you stay in front, we don't have to rotate. And if you don't have to rotate, we're good. Like, we're golden from that point. Like, it's just basic.
I'd say similar as well. Stay in front of the ball. If you get beat by half a step, apply side pressure. That's it.
Oh, geez, that's complex. There's a lot of that. Like,
well, side close out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Now I'm with you. Yep, I got you now.
That's it, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. This is good that I'm doing this, because I'm testing out my terminology on yous both.
No, no. Well, strap in, because it could go pear-shaped real quick.
It's already gone pear-shaped before I came in here.
Yep. Gotcha. All right, Nick, what was your first one?
My one was actually given to me, this was actually the day before my wedding. So my cousin said to me, Nick, the best advice I can give you is don't be a nice man, be a good man. So this probably applies a little bit more to the boys' side, and it's just a culture piece that I bring with the junior male athletes, that sometimes we think we have to be just this nice person. We don't ask some questions. Even though you're honest, you can be respectful, so you don't have to say in a derogatory way. But it's just something that I believe in as well, that I don't want to just be the player's friend all the time, and I've got to check myself. Am I being a nice man, or am I being a good man with these and being honest with these players?
Yeah, cool. Well, I like it. Do you find yourself having to check yourself regularly?
Yeah, 100%, because we do, like, inherently there are some players that you really like. There are some players that you make some preconceived judgments about. You've got to take a step back and go, well, am I evaluating it through this lens of nice guy versus good guy? And, I do often have that. We actually have it at the front of our locker room door. So when they walk through the door, it says, don't be a nice man, be a good man for the youth league players anyway.
Yeah, okay. I like it. It's not too bad. First one I had was, I can't remember where I saw it. I know Mel Robbins was interviewing someone and the other person said it on this one, which was talent counts, but effort counts twice. And it's just a thing that sort of sticks, because I think it's like, talented people are great. Don't get me wrong. We need them. We need them in teams. We need them in benches, all that sort of stuff. But people that just try, like, there's something to be said for it, that they find a way to continue fighting when even you don't think they should. And I mean, Dele's probably a great example of it. Like, you look at what he went through in the NBA finals guarding Steph. And it's like, look, Dele's a talented player. Like, no one's taking that away from him. But you look at the effort that it took, and we're seeing it again at the moment guarding Bryce Cotton in the NBL finals. But just that effort, I think, lifts everyone else around. And it's the ability to back up time and time again when they don't want to, when they're feeling average. But they're just like, no, this is what I have to do. And it's where I've actually really struggled is, and this is a little bit of an old man yells at cloud moment, which I'll happily put my hands up to. I'm struggling to get the newer generation to give multiple efforts. Like, I see one and I see them try and all that sort of thing. Zero issues with that. But what I do see is I'll try it once. It hasn't worked. I'm going to go away from what I'm... It's like, no, just try twice, like, or try three times, or, you know, just keep working at it. I haven't quite cracked how to drill into that yet. And I don't know if you've got any suggestions for me, because I'll happily take them on board, but I haven't quite got there yet.
I was just going to ask, if you figured it out, can you let me know as well? Because I definitely do have those issues as well. Try it once, doesn't work, can't do it, those sorts of things. The other thing that I think applies to that, because I think you make a really good point, is like, players being able to play through soreness.
See, this is an interesting one. Like, there's a difference between sore and injured.
100%.
Yes. And I don't know how to convey where that line is, because you've got players that you see will run through a brick wall regardless of sore, injured or anything in between.
But that's why inherently we have to be cautious, right? Yeah. We have to take that step back and go, well, we don't know.
Yeah.
Like I know as a coach, like I won't, even if like maybe I have my thoughts and go, look, I think you're sore. I think you've had a couple of sessions this week and you're sore, not injured, but I still have to keep them off the floor.
Yep.
So I'm not suggesting that. I don't know. Or is it more of a case of we have better medicine and technology and stuff to be able to identify injuries more? And
we're certainly more aware of it.
Like more prehab and things like that?
I think like concussion's a good example because we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. But 15 years ago, if you got a head knock, it was like, oh, you're good to go? Yeah, excellent, jump back in. Whereas now it's like, oh, actually, that's a concussion. We need to sit them out for a certain period of time to actually understand it a little bit more. Like I think back to the first person that I really saw have multiple concussions being impacted was Rachel Jarry. Like that, she had a real nasty run in there for a few months where it just kept happening, it felt like. And that was the first time I think I was really aware of, actually, this is a problem. But now I'm more aware of it. I can deal with it a little better, I guess. Like, all right, how do you navigate the line between sore and injured, Janet? Like, is there a little sort of test or a question you'd ask someone as to can you go or do you just not want to go?
So for me, I am on the side of caution.
Yep.
Obviously, the girls that I'm coaching are doing a lot. So I always hedge on the side of caution for myself. But I know, I don't know who started it, but it was either the Sapphires physio Bridie or up at the AAS, they've come up with like emojis for 1 to 10, just to give the athletes a better idea of how sore are you actually? Because you'll be like, what's your soreness out of 10? And they'll be like, oh, an 8. And then they'll bring up the emojis and they're like, oh, actually, no, I'm a 3. So trying to get the athletes to understand. A way for them to understand in their language, which is emoji. So I feel like that's been working better with the junior Australian teams and up at the AAS.
Yeah, okay. I don't mind that.
Can we get a copy of that scale? Like, in all seriousness, that is a really good idea.
Yeah, I don't mind it at all.
Can we? Are we allowed to put in the show notes or anything like that? I don't know.
I'm not sure we can make up our own if we had to. Like, it's, racing car might be 10 or something like that. But, you know, we can kind of figure something out. But, I mean, that's not a bad way to look at it because there is a difference. And, you know, how many times you go, oh, I feel a bit sick. Oh, how sick are you? Oh, you know, 8. It's like, really? Like, you just feel a bit sick. Like, it'll be okay. Like, it's not as if your arm's hanging off or something like that.
And then when I was growing up, I remember Phil Brown telling me that a 10 was like a hot iron being put on your skin.
Yep.
And so I felt like I played through everything because it was never that.
That's the comparison.
Yeah.
I also love that scale as well.
And that wasn't good for me. I played with broken bones and all types of things. So I think...
Which is not sore. That's not sore. That's injured.
That's injured.
That's injured.
But I just, like, that was what was in my head for my understanding. So I think it's more all of us just trying to, have the athletes understand what the scale and ratios are for soreness and injuries.
No, I like it. I like it. All right, Jenna, we're on to your next one. What have you got for us?
Well, one of mine was actually hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, which is a classic, which sort of goes into yours. So I'll do a different one, but I think it's this was more when I played. Work hard in silence, let your success be your noise. I know that in today's day and age, it's very much put everything on social media, every single weight session, every single shooting session, every single indie. But I think always for me, I liked getting in first, getting my shots up, leaving last. That was sort of a mantra that I had in my head because I wanted to work harder than everyone so that, people would see my success afterwards. So it's a different time at the moment, but that always resonated with me when I was growing up playing.
I really like, and you're dead on, like bang on with the social media world that we live in at the moment. It's hard not to see, you know, that sort of stuff. But I also remember, you know, a day where we didn't have social media, you know, 10 years ago, or give or take, where there were plenty of times where you'd see someone that you haven't seen for 2 or 3 months and go, damn, they've improved. Like the work they've put in is quite impressive here, and the body of work that you know there's been some unseen hours.
A lot of unseen hours.
Yeah. Like that's the caveat to it, I think, is that
And those unseen hours is where you find yourself as well. It's like that's what I think. Yeah, I think it's a big thing that's missing in the culture, isn't it?
But it's not just skill, it's mental.
Yeah.
Like I love the mental side of it. It's like, hey, I don't need your validation. Like it's, you know, I'm gonna just go away and do.
Remember when John Stockton used to work out at Utah Stadium in the dark with the lights out or something, so he could just visualize. And we found out later after he retired, that's what he was doing.
Yep,
like all that stuff. It's cool.
No, I really like that, to be honest, because it is like I'd like to see more of it. Like just go do the work
or not see.
Well, more, yeah, good point, actually. Not so. Very well done, Nick. But, what's your next one?
Oh, it's me. Okay. It's not okay. Well done.
Poorly done, Nick.
Handballed over. But anyway, not everyone gets a chance to score, but everyone gets a chance to play defense. Like, it's an old school one for me, but it's, you know, there is only one basketball, and although we want the ball to move and players to move off the ball, the reality is that certain players get certain touches and some get more than others and some get more scoring opportunities than others. But your ability to defend will always be found out, because you'll either be guarding the ball, you'll be one pass away, two pass away, or three pass away. So you will all get a chance to play defense. That's why a lot of conversations and a lot of our training sessions involve defensive stuff, because that is just the staple, the start of it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Is that how you try and get buy-in from your players? In that, by highlighting the fact that you will always be expected to defend at some point, this is a level that even if the offense isn't working for you, there's going to be a side of the ball you can play on.
Yeah, it's how I get buy-in. It's how it creates the culture of it's the possession actually starts on the defensive end, not on the offensive end. For me personally, just in my opinion, and that. I find that we have a lot of one-on-one defenders. We don't have a lot of defenders that know how to play two, three, or four passes away. Yep. So just reminding them that it's not a possession off. You will all be playing defense when you're on the defensive end. Like, you all have a role to play in it. Yep.
Yeah, I like it. So this is one from – I started day one at Victoria Police, and I met like the chief inspector guy that was in charge of my job there, which was a little daunting to start off with. And he threw this at me like literally 2 minutes into meeting him for the first time, which was, you can delegate responsibility and authority, but not accountability. And I didn't understand it at the time. It's like, yeah, cool words, man. And let me go off and do my job. And then I was just sitting at my desk thinking about it. And I was like, oh, actually, now I get it. Like, you're trusting me to do the things that I'm supposed to be doing. But at the end of the day, if I screw these up, you're the one that cops it. And like, I think about coaching in particular, and how many of us have coaches that have coaches that have coaches that go down the line. You're charged with being responsible for the athletes. You're given authority over them because that's the hierarchical nature of coaching in general. But remember, if you screw up, like, there are repercussions to this, and it won't just be you that feels them. It will be multiple areas that feels them in that. And that's where I'm super passionate about, like, the child safety side of things in coaching and making sure that we do things the right way. Because ultimately, nobody wants to be the person that screws this up. We want it to be a better environment and a better place for people to feel safe, connected, and everything else in between. You are given a huge amount of responsibility as a coach. And that is the power vacuum that sits within that as well, the relationship you have with players, dealing with parents, front officers, everything in between. At the end of the day, someone is always accountable. And you need to hold yourself to that high standard, because even when the low road seems easier, it doesn't usually pan out well, funnily enough. Like, it's, you know, it's a little bit of like in the background stuff. Like, and you don't always see it, but you know there are people that you can just trust to do the right thing at the right time that I believe eventually get rewarded for it. And it is one thing I've tried to sort of take from the policing world into the basketball world. It's like, look, we don't have to deal with anywhere near the level of bad stuff that Victoria Police have to deal with, gratefully, in that space. But we are put in a position of power, and we have to treat that with the power that comes with it, I think, as it deserves. So from the coaching side, I think that was one of the ones that I've always liked. Jenna, we're on to you next.
sorry. The next one that I try and really put into my athletes is to – similar to yours, Nick, but control the controllables. Like, I think, yeah, we can't control where we get our touches generally, but we can control how hard we run every single time down the court, whether it be on offense or defense. We can control how hard we crash the offensive or defensive rebounds. We can control how we act on the bench. We can control our defensive pressure and intensity, our effort. And I think in today's day and age, just with social media, with box scores for everything, PlayHQ only shows points and fouls. So I feel like scoring is such a big thing for junior athletes coming through. If they're not scoring, they feel like they're not contributing, but there's just so many ways to contribute on a basketball court. And as you said, there's only one basketball, but there's so many other people on the court, and how are you contributing? And yeah, so being able to control those controllables. And I think even like thinking about the best shooter in the world, Steph Curry, what percentage does he shoot at? There's going to be
a good chunk.
It's 38-ish%, I think, was the highest, or close to, a little bit over,
So you're missing way more shots than you're making. So if you're only concentrating on whether the ball goes through the rim or not, you're going to have more disappointing nights than successful nights. So how else are you contributing to the game of basketball? And that control the controllables is the language that I've been trying to use to get that across to my athletes.
I think it's a really important one. I think it's like you can use the example as well of minutes. You can't control how many minutes you get, but you can control what you do within those minutes. Mm-hmm. With the shooting analogy as well, I heard something about like a good analogy about that as well, where what does it take, about 2 to 3 seconds to shoot the ball? So let's say you shoot a lot of shots in your 5 minutes. At most, you're shooting the ball for 35 seconds, let's say. What are you doing with the rest of the time? Like, you're still on the court. What are you doing to contribute to the game for the rest of that time after you've shot the ball? So,
It's such a mental battle, I think, that we're talking about here as well. Like, when we talk about things we can't control what the ref calls. Like, straight off the bat, like, that's one straight away. We can't control when we get put in, but we kind of can at the same time. If your minutes on your first run are good minutes because you hustle hard, you dive on those balls, you box everyone out, you're going to get another run. Like, that's something that is very much within your control. So I'd probably don't buy into the myth of you can't control your minutes, because I think you can. Mm. Like, maybe not your first lot, but eventually you can. If you show that you can play at that level and you can perform, well, you can start to control your minutes. And that's a mental shift.
Control those controllables. Every time you get minutes, you're going to get more of them.
Yeah. It's funnily enough, coaches like consistent players.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things where we like, okay, if we were to look on a scale, peaks and troughs all the way through. But there's something to be said for just that consistent player that you know that every time you put them in, they turn up. And the one that you can rely on, and they're the one that play at the end of the game, because it's like, hey, I know they're not going to do something stupid. Like, they're going to do something that high percentage for the team, those types of things.
It's come also up with you go.
I was just going to say predictable minutes. Like, the coaches really like that. If they rotate a player on the floor, they know what they're getting. Yep. They know at a bare minimum they're going to get a satisfactory result. Like, they're going to play you more and try and expand your role after that.
Yeah, coming up with possessions that shouldn't really be yours, but you're working harder than everyone else on the floor, that you come up with it, deflections, defensive, offensive rebounds, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's just, something that I've been reiterating to my athletes a lot recently.
Yep. And that's, I mean, it ties into one of the ones I had for later, but I'll throw it out now anyway, but your ceiling is irrelevant, build your floor. And that's kind of the whole, look, everyone's got potential. But the second you get tarred with that,
sometimes I hate that word.
Oh, it worries me so much. This player's got potential. Oh, now we put pressure on them. They maybe aren't ready for, or will never live up to, or anything like that. But the reality is, you don't, like, there's all this talk about, oh, you know, you'll rise to the level and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, all the data around that is incorrect. Like, you don't rise to the level, you sink to the level of your training. And if the level of your training is higher, well, then your capacity to be able to do more things is obviously better in that space. So, it's such a, like, the mental side of that one just fascinates me in general, because there are so many people that are very much glass half full, glass half empty, and everywhere in between. And that will change from before the game to after the game to in the game, where it can change. Like, one made shot can turn one kid that's had 3 bad weeks in a row into a completely different kid. It's amazing how much that happens. But again, what are you doing to impact your space? And I suppose that's a challenge in that.
And I think as coaches, we need to encourage and celebrate those controllables that they are doing, so they know that it's not just about scoring that is getting them minutes, like, encourage and
No, I really like that.
Yeah.
All right, you're on, Nick.
I was going to use the controllable one, but that's already taken, so I am thinking of another one. Let's go with promise a Mazda but deliver a Ferrari. This goes more to the coaches.
We're not sponsored by either, incidentally.
We are not.
Yeah.
I would, that would be great. Yeah. No, unfortunately not. But let's go with that one. So that's basically, you know, when you're, let's say you've got senior teams promising too much, I'll get all these players in. I'm going to win the next three championships the next 3 years. Like, build your base similar, right, where you, your expectations are, I want to develop these three players. I want them to potentially go to the next level, right? And then everything outside of that, if that's a bonus, then it's a bonus. But just don't promise things that you don't think you can deliver on.
It's funny because the quote I've heard is offer the world and give an atlas, like the opposite of it.
Okay.
And I've had coaches do that to me plenty, so I much prefer yours.
Yeah.
But there's something to it. Like, and it's, you only have to be lied to by a coach once and all of a sudden trust is broken. And that can be at like the under 10 level through to the pro level. The second you have that one negative experience because what you told me was going to happen hasn't happened, that's all it takes. And you can break a relationship that's potentially taken years to build on one flippant comment that, you know, is literally just that. It's a flippant comment with no substance to it. And it destroys everything you've worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not, I mean, court time is probably the easiest way to navigate this one. If you play for me, you'll play 25 minutes a game.
That's then all a of dangerous a sudden it's space. Like,
yeah, they do for the first game, but then all of a sudden it's 20, and then it's 15, and then it's 10. And it's like, well, do you want promises without, you know, the output, so to speak? Coaches are going to do what they need to do. And again, we're talking the high-end level in this sort of space. But, you know, any coach that promises minutes, that's a coach I'd be really worried about. That's because I just don't think you can live up to it. There's so many variables that come with it. Like, initially, yeah, okay, you've signed me to play this role. Now I don't need to play that role. So do all my minutes go away or does some of my minutes not appear? Like, have you got someone better in that role? Of course that's going to happen. You would hope that everyone develops over the course of a season. But, yeah, the promising minutes concerns me.
The most I've done in that space is probably a rough estimate. And I've said to them, it's like 8 to 18 minutes, but ish. I don't know for sure because I don't know this, and this. Yeah.
But also you have to earn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not given.
Yeah.
It's,
you have to show up every day at training and prove to me that you deserve those minutes too.
Yeah. Exactly. Like it's your job to keep them. Like that's the reality because you would be doing a disservice to another player in that team if they do all the work, they have all the output, but their minutes stay exactly the same, even if they're outworking and outperforming you. Like, that's not the right thing to do. We all know that's not the right thing to do. So it is a weird little sort of thing that people get really, oh, but they've said I'm going to get these shots in these minutes. And it's like, oh, yeah, but remember, like, coaches kind of become salesmen when they're putting teams together. Like, they kind of have to. Like, you feel like you're selling your soul at times to try and get a team together.
You're also 0 from 20 in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So that's probably why you're not getting a
shot. I don't really want you to shoot that one now, like, until you can prove it. But, you know, it's a real interesting little spot. My next one was biting your tongue whilst eating shows that even mastery has windows where things go wrong. And I do this far too often.
Same, to be completely honest. Really, what a
quote. That's a great quote, by the way. I haven't heard that one. That's good. That's really good.
Well, I think it's very relatable because we've all done it. Let's face it. Like, we've all done that.
I did it last night.
Yep. I still don't understand how. I've been chewing for this long.
Yeah. What is going on?
Do you get the cheek as well?
Yeah, I do.
I get. Oh, I bite the cheek sometimes, like by accident.
Yep.
No, I think it's because I'm eating too many chips.
You know, the worst bit is when you get multiple bites on the same spot. It's like, I've just done this six minutes ago. Yes, how have I done it again?
All in the same area. Yeah.
It's no good. Whether that be tongue, whether that be cheek, it doesn't matter. But it is a great just little reminder that you can be as good as you want to be at stuff. You're probably still going to make mistakes from time to time. Mm-hmm. And we need to be kind to ourselves, but we also need to be kind to other people that make mistakes because we don't know what's going on in their space. We don't know if it's just been one of those days or one of those, whatever it might be in that sort of world. And, you know, I was with a coach recently who asked, can you come and watch me coach the game? I'm like, yep, no worries, I'll be there. Went and watched it. And I have a very good relationship with this coach. I have to put this out there first because I don't come across in a great light in a couple of minutes here.
This is when it gets good, Jenna.
Yeah. Like, yep, I'm happy to come and watch you coach, no problems. And coach the game, the first thing, like the first interaction we had afterwards, they said, you know, what'd you think? I'm like, mate, that wasn't great. Like, you did not coach that well. And straight away, it's like, yeah, it's been a week. Like, this has gone wrong. This has gone wrong. This has gone wrong. This has gone wrong. I'm like, yeah, we're fine. Like, I know that now, but I didn't know it at the time. And I've treated that observation on my end like I would every other time I've worked with that coach and seen the coach and those types of things as well. So from mine, I've gone in thinking we're in the same space, not realizing we're not in the same space, because where I might be in a different spot or the same spot potentially, they've had potentially the car breakdown, or they've had a week at work where it's just been a nightmare. You know, the kids have kicked off, or the kids have been sick or something like that, which just impacts down the line. And I would expect better from that coach from what I've normally seen. And that's where I've come to that conclusion, in that, hey, that wasn't your best. Now, we figured it out from there. Like, it certainly wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but it is crazy how often you can just, you go in with a mentality of this is what this is going to look like, and all of a sudden it doesn't look like that. And you got to remember the stuff going on behind the scenes. The surface level stuff is easy. Like, everyone can make those assessments. But going deeper than that, that's where it becomes a little bit more complicated, I think. So
this applies to the players as well. Like, if they have a one training session where they're a little bit off, you don't know what's happening at home. Is there a fight between the parents? Is something happened with one of their siblings? Like, you don't know what's going on, a pressure from homework, whatever it is.
Yep.
I think that's why it's so important to build those relationships with your players, because you can spot that.
Yep.
They're not their normal selves tonight. Just a quick check-in before training, like, is everything okay, so that you're on the same page. And it might be a night that, yeah, you're not riding them as much as you might usually because they're going through some things.
It is. And it's amazing how much that changes someone's day, like having someone actually just ask. Because, I mean, let's someone put it caring. In the context of kids. Like, they're usually spoken at. And all of a sudden a coach shows, actually, I do care. Like, how are you going? That might be the first time they've heard that all day. And that's the time they really needed to hear it. So please just pay attention to that and don't do what I did and just go in with, hey, that wasn't great, was it?
Yeah, I would say you weren't like nasty to him. You know what I mean?
I don't hate myself because of it.
I've heard you give feedback. So just in your defense, I don't think you're going in going, that was shocking. Like, it's
there is context. I will admit to that. But again, like, just be conscious that you don't always have the full picture with a lot of things. So just be mindful of that. Jenna, we're on to you for the next one.
Yeah, my next one is more from playing days. But when I was 17, I had a really bad injury and I was told I wouldn't play basketball again. So I got back to playing. So it was always like, play every game like it's your last, because you actually never know when it is going to be your last. Yep. And I know that was when I knew it was time to retire, because I couldn't, I wasn't getting up for games like I had in the past. So I knew that mentally I wasn't in it. But I just think it's such a privilege that your body and mind can get out there and play and practice. And to have that injury when I was quite young just put everything into perspective for me. And
I'm assuming you didn't go back to that doctor that's incorrectly diagnosed you on this one. Like, you had a fair old career after the age of 17, I'd suggest.
It was a pretty bad injury.
But he was still wrong. We're just throwing it out there, Jenna. Like,
but yeah, I just basketball is just my favorite sport and game in the world. So to be able to play for as long as what I did was a true privilege. And yeah, I think just always brought me back that when things got tough or frustrating or hard, that yeah, play every game like it's your last, because it might actually be.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, don't get me wrong, we're seeing kids that are bigger, stronger, more athletic than we've ever seen before coming through at the moment. But because of that comes high-speed collisions, comes a lot of weight going onto a knee at the wrong time and those sorts of things. It might be, and you just never know. Mm. Like, it's, you know, 12-month rehab on a knee doesn't seem like it's that bad. Oh, it's only 12 months, but try living that. That's not easy. And I mean, you touched on it, Jenna, as well. Like, when you weren't getting up for things mentally and physically. And it's amazing how both of them have the same impact at the same time. Mm. Like, an injury impacts mentally.
I actually think mentally I was struggling, which made my body hurt more.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I think my mind, everyone's mind is so strong.
Yep.
But yeah, mentally I think it was more, it was impacting me more, because once I retired, my body actually felt quite good. But waking up for training, so I was like, oh, everything is sore.
Is it also like in your head you're going, I've got to do this, this and this today? And it's a very long day when you have to put all that together, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, what do I do with all this time?
For sure. So it definitely goes, both ways.
Mm. Absolutely. And you're just deciding to relive it by walking upstairs whilst pregnant at the moment, which is
cheapest.
You know, it's like coming back into preseason conditioning. Like, it's no good. Nick, what did you have next?
That's like discovering plutonium by accident is one of them.
Okay. You're going to need to give me context on this.
Yeah, I will. I just threw this at Rob, and then he – He didn't write anything back because he was like, all right, I'm going to have to ask him afterwards. It's a pretty simple one. It's from the Seinfeld. I won't go into the episode, but it's a funny one with George Costanza.
So my curiosity now is how does this apply to basketball?
It absolutely applies to basketball. It is when you have injuries and you've got a player that's played in a certain position the whole time, and then out of necessity, you've had to move him out of the position. So let's say that there are three or four. You've had some injuries in the point guard, so you've had to shift everyone up and you put him in the point guard position, and all of a sudden you realize that you've got something there who can work a ball screen, who can get feet in the paint and score, and they're actually more athletic than you thought they were. Like that's where I'll turn to the coach and be like, oh, I didn't know they could do that. You know, I think we just discovered plutonium by accident.
Well, the context now makes a lot more sense, to be completely honest, than it did at the start. And so I'm on board with that.
I could see you were worried about when I was going with the episode. You were like, oh.
I didn't really know where it was going, but that's okay. But it is interesting is that sometimes we can put ceilings on players and on coaches as well, that we see them as a role and it's like, that's what they are. But they can be a lot more than that if given the opportunity to grow. And I think that's the challenge. And again, talking to the Ballarat coaches last night about it, it's like, please do not pigeonhole kids in under 12s. We don't know which kid's going to grow, which kid is not going to grow, which kid's going to be the shooter, which kid's going to be the best defender. Just let them be everything they want to be in under 12s. Every kid can carry the ball. And yes, it's frightening when your tallest player takes off in transition dribbling and it's like, well, this is probably not going to win super well, but how do they learn if they don't? And that's such a big part of junior coaching is just the trial and error stuff. We don't have all the answers. The kids definitely don't have all the answers, and nor are they at the end of their development spectrum, I'll say, for lack of a better way of putting it, that they can figure it out for themselves.
I think we just got to be aware of our own confirmation bias, right? Like we've got to, that's a four because that coach told me that they're a four or whatever it is. Like it's not, like just try, just prove the experiment wrong rather than right.
Yep, I don't mind that at all. All right, I've got a couple left still. I'm trying to go with something that I haven't, that doesn't go along lines of what we've already done. One of my favourites is do today what others won't, so you can do tomorrow what others can't. But I think that ties into everything we've already said. I don't think we need to unpack it more than that. What else have I got? Don't throw bounce passes in transition.
Boo. Rob Calder.
Yeah. I will die on this hill happily. I'm just not a believer.
Both look at I'm like, yeah. I'm not chiming
it's
in.
Weighing
in.
This is
between you two.
The amount of people who come up to me talking about bounce passes in transition.
Oh, it's a regular. Look, it's, and again, I've softened my stance on this slightly. I'm happy for you to throw it, but there has to be some heat on that thing to get it there. Like, as long as that, I can live with it.
It's and not your name has to be Jenna.
Well, potentially. Is it my first preference? No. I would rather you throw it out in front so they can run onto it. Sure. But there might be a time and a place, in particular if you're in like a two-on-one type thing. Yeah, I can kind of find the way around that. But again, it's off on a tangent. What was my other one? Confidence comes from proof, not personality. Like I get so many parents talk to me about, oh, my child's lost confidence. My child's lost confidence. And it does everything in my being to not sit there and say, you're lying. They haven't lost confidence. They haven't done the work is the problem. Because if I know I've done the work, there is nothing that anybody can possibly tell me that will make me deviate from me knowing that I've done the work and I'm able to perform in this situation at that time. Will you play for critical and negative coaches? 100% you will. Will it always be easy? Absolutely not. But if you know you've done the work, why would you have any other thought in your head other than I've done this before, I know I've done this before, I know I can do this now? Will it always work out? Not necessarily. But I think the proof is in the pudding for that. Like it's
that is such a good one. I think it's so true. It's so true. It goes for coaches as well. Like if I don't know what the HPCs have given me, if I was a hub lead, for example, then I'm not going to be confident when I take the floor. But if I sit there for a week and look at the diagrams and ask questions, then I will be confident. So it does come down to what have I done prior to walking into that session. Yeah, I think it's a really good one.
Yep. Jenna, what do you got next?
Bit of a different one, but it's something that I learned as a player that I try and keep in perspective when I'm a coach as well, but different courses for different horses. Obviously, there's different tracks that suit different horses. And I think just as a player, I know that sometimes coaches just did not like me. It didn't mean that I was a different or worse player because yep. this coach didn't like me, but it was just reality. And I really, as a coach, try and keep a really open mind, similar to what you were saying, like give them chances to be able to do different things. And especially in my role, I definitely don't want to pigeonhole any yeah. athletes, because I want them to succeed and be able to grow in confidence and all those kinds of things. So I just, as a player, I would, it can be sometimes hard when a coach that doesn't seem to like the way you play seems to be in every team that you want to be making. But
how did you know, Jenna? Like, I'm just curious how you knew that they didn't like you. Other than being picked in squads. Yeah, okay.
Like, not just even team squads.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Writing's on the wall. Yeah, right.
Yeah, so for 3 years, it's like, yep, this isn't for me, but I'm still doing my work in silence, and mm-hmm. there's still other coaches that I have that appreciate the good things that I do. And as a coach, I do think we have to keep an open mind. I think sometimes we can see a player and we make our decisions on them, and then they do go away and do some work. And when they come back, we need to be able to see those improvements and not just pigeonhole them to that player that we saw 2 years ago, for example. Different courses for different horses, but as a coach, I just really feel like we need to keep an open mind to the hard work that these players do yep. put in, and the changes that they can make and the feedback that they take on.
Yeah, definitely. And let's face it, there are so many different pathways. Not everyone has to follow the same path.
For sure.
And, I mean, college is probably the best example of it at the moment. Like, you don't have to go to a Div 1 school. You can go to a Div 2 school. You can go to a JUCO. Go wherever. You may end up at the same end point as someone that has the golden run all the way through that makes every
some
team.
Some Div 2 schools are better than Div 1 schools.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Like, for it sure. changes. Not everyone wants to go to college. Some want to go pro. Some are pretty content to ply their trade in, say, NBL 1 or Big V for a little while until they're ready to be able to make that jump as well. There's a pathway for sure, and I always get a little bit funny about the pathway term in general because I'm not totally convinced, but what I've started using now more is stepping stones. Like, there are stepping stones, and whichever path you want to take on that stepping stone, that's fine. Sometimes they'll intersect and you all have to go through the one. Like, if you are trying to make a Boomers and Ropals or something like that, well, hey, congratulations, you're all at the same end point, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take the same path to get there. And
different courses for different horses.
That's the thing. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, Dante Exum took a very different stepping stones to get himself back into. Like, he went yeah. in the NBA, out to Europe, worked on his shot, came back. He's yep. in the NBA again.
Absolutely. You know? Like, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Like, and everyone needs different experiences,
and they are unique as well, right? Like, yep. I don't think there's many that are going to follow the same stepping stones as Dante Exum. It'll be slightly different the next yep. time as well.
Absolutely. Yep. All right, Nick, what do you got left?
Not much. I think we kind of touched on this, so I don't need to unpack it, but be better today than you were yesterday. Like, yep. that's just a simple one that I think we've touched on a couple of times.
Definitely.
So,
my last couple that I had, basketball specific, which has been on because we've gone off on some weird tangents on this one. Ball moves, zone moves, you move, in that order. So zone offense in particular is what we're talking about here. The ball has to shift, then the zone has to shift, then you can shift and you can start to work out where your gaps are from there. So I've used that a lot with zone offense teams. The obvious one, of course, is like the most quotable quote of all time, which is be curious, not judgmental, which is, of course, you know, everyone's favorite Ted Lasso, which I don't think we necessarily need to unpack on that end. But the last one I had was, if you want to lead the orchestra, you need to turn your back on the crowd. And sometimes,
oh yeah, that's a deep one.
It is a case of, hey, the right thing is not necessarily what the crowd is doing. And, you know, there's the old saying that goes with it, which I'm, you know, two for one bonus, of course. If you start to listen to the crowd, don't be shocked when you're sitting with them. Like, yeah. And as a coach, you've got to be really direct on the direction you're going, what you want, and how you want it done. If you start listening to too many voices that probably don't have the same skin in the game that you have, don't be shocked when you don't have that coaching job anymore. And that's kind of the reality of it a lot of times. If your job is in under 12 to play everyone, but you have some noise on the side saying you shouldn't be playing everyone, you should be, you know, playing just a certain couple of players, don't be shocked if you're sitting with the other crowd pretty quick. And part of it is you've got to be a leader. That mm-hmm. And it sucks at times, and then you feel like you've missed out or you've whatever. That's the deal. Like, that's the job.
That's what Darren Best used to say, make sure you know your goalposts with your association as well, because when that noise comes, you've got to have a really clear direction from your club what they want with your team, you know, from your BDM or your CEO or whatever it is.
Yep. So that was one. Jenny, you got any more left?
I'm out.
Tapped out. Cool. All right, so we are on to socials split talk for this week.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
All right, so this one's a little different. Normally I have a sound grab for this one, but I couldn't find a sound grab, which kind of annoyed me. So anyway, I'm going off on a different tangent here. So Steve Magnus had this as a tweet during the week, last week. So he's the author of Do Hard Things. And I don't know if you saw the clip of Brenda Fries, who is the Maryland coach, getting face-to-face with one of her players and is like, I believe in you and all this sort of stuff. Like, it was a pretty intense, like, Google it if you haven't seen it. You'll be able to find it pretty quick. And what it looks like and the messaging behind it are two fairly different things but kind of intertwined at the same time. So, unfortunately, you are going to have to listen to me fumble over my reading as this goes through, as I make the font bigger, going full knee-high on this one just to make sure that I can actually see it.
Can someone show me how to do that later, by the way?
I'll let you know. So, on the clip, Steve Magnus has said, most people are getting this wrong. It's not being coached hard or soft. It's a coach saying the right thing at the right time to get them out of the spiral and focus them on what matters. When you're in that spiral, your attention scatters. You're replaying mistakes, drifting into the future, losing the moment. Fries disrupted this in two ways. First, she walked directly to Okinawa, locked eyes, and forced her to focus and connect with her in the present. Second, she gave confidence and agency. Damn confidence. You know, it might have contradicted what I was saying before, but that's okay. I believe in you, but you've got to want this moment. This isn't my story. She didn't say, what are you doing? Get your head in the game. Those feed the spiral, giving your brain evidence that it's all going wrong, akin to telling a nervous person to just relax. In our lowest moments, we need a signal that someone still sees what we're capable of and then gives us the agency and the challenge to go and get it. She scored 7 points in the third quarter of that exchange, added 6 more in the fourth, and finished the game with a team-high 21 points. Maryland still lost, but Okinawa showed up. It was a brilliant display of snapping a player out of everything scattering towards catastrophe. Really, what that was a regroup moment for myself and her telling me she believed in me. Sometimes that's all you really need to hear, Okinawa said. And research backs this up. Psychologists at the University of Amsterdam found that whatever emotional state coaches expressed predicted their players' emotional state and subsequent performance. Angry coaches produce frustrated players who made more errors. Another study of basketball players found that low to moderate anger targeted at a specific problem could improve performance. Raw, undirected intensity made things worse. Targeted intensity that was aimed at something solvable worked. Texas A&M football coach Mike Elko put it this way, my job is to be calm and collected when they're frantic. My job is to create intensity when they're not intense. My job is to always be the opposite of the moment. The leader's job is to find the counterbalance. Free saw her star's attention drifting when the moment called her focus and controlled fire. So she brought the intensity Okinawa wasn't bringing on her own. Most people see the intensity and focus that's the important takeaway, and it's not. It's just one tool used in a specific moment. Damn specific word. Always gets me. Fries said this herself after the game. You can't have these conversations if you don't have a relationship with them. And it's the relationship underneath that gives you the ability to use the right tool at the right time. And sometimes that tool is direct eye contact, and I believe in you. Other times, it's taking a calm breath and a reminder that I value you as a human, not just as an athlete. Or, as I had one athlete request at a time, just cuss me out in the last 400 meters, tell me it's worth dying for. Sometimes you pull out the crazy if that disrupts the cycle. Know your athlete, build the relationship, then know when to disrupt the cycle and focus them on the work at hand. And that was a fascinating input into it. Like, genuinely, if you haven't seen the clip, go and have a look at the clip because it looks super intense. Like, and this time of year in particular, we get all the great coaching clips as March Madness is just tipping off, not kicking off. And it's a real fascinating little sort of space. But this was one where I really enjoyed the deep dive behind it. And it's, we're in such a relationship business and, you know, and it sounds horrible and all that sort of stuff. But the reality is if you have a relationship with a player or with a coach, you can help. It's when we're disconnected and then the communication or the messaging, I think, just gets lost. And it takes 2 minutes to build connection with people. Like, just a quick, how are you going? Everything good? Anything I can do for you? Done? No worries. That can be enough at times. And I think it's the least spoken about part of coaching that needs to be spoken about more, because I think everyone thinks they're a good relationship builder, but ask your players if you are. Like if you are a coach in that place, ask them. Find out if you are good at building relationships, and they will happily tell you if you're not. So genuinely go and revisit that if you are a coach at this point, that if you think you're good relationships, great. I hope you are. But go and have a look at it. And I cannot recommend Steve Magnus's book enough. He's got a few out there, but Do Hard Things is a really good read as well if you're looking for something to have a bit of a read off.
Watch that video as well because it's freaking intense, intense.
It's the first time I looked at it, it's like, oh, no, someone's getting fired.
Yeah, that's and what I thought too.
It was
too.
Only when I sort of unpacked it, it's like, oh, no, they're not. So, you know, be curious, not judgmental. You know, just schmick on the end of it.
And I think you spoke about like the coach-player relationship, but I think it's just relationships in general in life. Like the people around you are really important and we can help in so many ways if we understand that relationship. So, sort of part of, I feel like the meaning of life is the relationships of those around you. So really get to know your people and it just is a more, my brain doesn't really work with the baby, but like just a better life for everyone.
Come on, Jenny, you've got two brains in you at the moment. It should be better again. No. Like it's, yeah,
is that alarming for me? Because it made a lot of sense. Yeah. So
Nothing alarms me anymore when it comes to you. Like
we're surprises you, Rob, apparently. Yeah,
I should be better prepared for that plutonium quote. But, you know, apparently I wasn't. So, coaches, thanks very much for listening once again. Jenna, congrats and good luck.
Thank you.
And we'll see you back here shortly, I'm sure of it. Nick, probably next week.
Rock on.
Coaches, catch you later.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.